are listening to County Conversations, a podcast brought to you by the New York State Association of Counties. This episode features a conversation between NYSEC Executive Director Stephen Aquario and Sarah Ravenhall, Executive Director of the New York State Association of County Health Officials. They discuss the functions and responsibilities of local health departments, the 24/7 coordination of COVID testing, and how county health departments are rising to meet the needs of residents and communities throughout New York State.
Thank you for joining us. I'm Stephen Aquario, the Executive Director of the New York Association of Counties. I'm joined with Sarah Ravenhall of the New York State Association of County Health Officials. Thanks for joining us, Sarah.
Thanks for having me, Stephen.
Sarah, you have been very, very busy during this most extraordinary time addressing a pandemic. Tell us a little bit about NYSHO and tell us a little bit about the membership that you represent.
Of course. So NYSHO, the New York State Association of County Health Officials, represents the 58 local health departments across New York State, including New York City. And we work to support our members. We provide technical assistance, meeting opportunities, sharing best practices, and we have a relationship with the State Department of Health. So we do anything we can to help our members achieve their local goal of, protecting the health and safety of the communities that they serve.
Very, very important role in the community and a historical role. The counties have been involved in public health for hundreds of years, very important and thrust to the center stage, certainly in 2020 during this pandemic. County health departments, a very instrumental role in protecting the community, flattening the curve, as our governor likes to reference, reducing the amount people getting the COVID-19 virus. The local health officials played a very important role. Let's take a few minutes and talk about that role. First, let's talk about the vaccine, quote unquote. We hear a lot from Washington, D.C. over these last few weeks talking about state vaccination plans and requiring the states to have a vaccine distribution plan. The governor of the state of New York talking about 40 million people having to get this vaccine distributed in the state of New York. That's a lot of vaccines to distribute. Of course, administering 12 million COVID-19 tests alone in New York was very difficult. How's the state process of putting in place a vaccine distribution plan coming along?
You're absolutely right about that. It's going to be a massive undertaking. NYSHO is very fortunate to have an appointed position on the New York State's vaccine COVID-19 vaccine distribution task force. So we are giving local health department input into the state-level plan. So I see the current plan as something that's going to evolve as we learn more. And as we know, there's a lot to be learned on the federal level about distribution and priority levels and all of this. So as we prepare for the first federally approved vaccine to be released on the market, we're locally growing increasingly concerned about the toll it's going to take on our public health workforce. So we know this is going to be an incredible feat, likely one of the most important of all of our careers. And we know that counties and local health departments will be at the forefront and the helm, really bearing the weight of this responsibility. We're trained. We've done this with other pandemic responses, H1N1 most notably, and we're good at this. But from the state level, I think we really, and the federal level, we really need relief in the form of unrestricted, flexible funding so that we can hire the staff to do the work. Local health departments are involved in distributing vaccine. They may be storing vaccine, distributing it to priority sites in their community to make sure that there is vaccine uptake, educating communities, holding pods. So people can come to these pods, and that's just a regular part of emergency preparedness, and get their vaccine at the county level. So there's a lot that goes into this.
Yes, the governor is making it clear today, October 22nd, that the local governments will follow the state directives on the vaccine distribution. Okay, no problem. We look forward to working with our state and making sure we can get this vaccine out to all of New Yorkers who are in desperate need of this. Thank you so much for all that you're doing with the state's task force. And again, we look forward to working with our governor and the State Department of Health. Let's talk about the Abbott rapid test information coming out. Again, Washington, D.C. sending to the states millions and hundreds of millions of these rapid tests. Of course, these are 15-minute tests. What do we know about the tests, and what do we not know about these tests?
Right. So the Abbott tests that are being distributed to counties across New York State, which we're very happy to see this happening. This has been something that we've requested for many months to make sure that there's testing equity across the state. So what we know about these tests, there are two different types of Abbott tests that are being distributed based on what the local health department is requesting and what the county is requesting. The first is an Abbott ID Now. That's a machine. It is a rapid test, but it is a molecular PCR test. The second type of test that is available to localities, if they should so choose, is the Abbott Binax test, which is a little card. It's also a rapid test. That's an antigen test. And as you may know, there are very different uses between the molecular and the antigen testing that county health officials know all about, and they know what environments to use those tests in. But they are different types of tests that have different validity. And those are the two tests that are being provided in this throughout the state.
Well, New Yorkers are certainly fortunate to have you at the helm at NYSHO to help explain these complicated words. These are some complicated issues, some complicated policies, some complicated medical procedures, and if I'm not mistaken, these Abbott tests require a medical personnel to administer these tests. Is that true?
That's a great point. So what's needed is a medical order for anybody that's being tested, and then a medical laboratory license. And, you know, there's a lot that goes into this. The applications are very thorough. There are a lot of legal requirements. You need to have the right trained staff. So it's not as simple as, here's a test, you can take it. There are definitely parameters that need to be followed within the locality or whoever's using the test to be legally able to use it under the emergency authorization use.
Thank you, Sarah. Again, thank you so much for helping to explain. I know the counties were very involved with pooled testing, with diagnostic PCR testing, antigen testing for the past 7 months in 2020. We had an awful lot to do with the testing components, and I'm very grateful, for all the work that you have done. Let's talk about school testing, of course, where we have mass gatherings, such as a school, such as a college, but let's talk about schools, K-12 schools. When we have certain incidences there, symptoms, asymptomatic children being tested. How are the protocols being implemented presently with school testing? Are the school districts or the schools themselves working through county health departments, or are they working through private providers for testing?
It really depends on the county. I'll tell you, this has been a big focus for us in the fall, and I can attest to the fact that this has been a 24/7 operation. It does not end day and night. Localities are working with schools, colleges, and universities as they develop and implement reopening plans. And state-level guidance continues to be unveiled, and when it is unveiled, we respond to it accordingly and make sure that everybody, the local health department and the schools and the administrators there, are up to speed on what to do. And it's frankly been a challenge, but something that we are prepared for, and when there is an uptake in cases, the local health department supports the school in either quarantining classrooms, making sure that cleaning and disinfection is taken care of, everything that we can do to make sure that in-person school settings are as safe as possible because we know how important in-person learning is to these students. And it's also great that there are remote options available for if, the school decides that they need to close that school down or close a classroom for a certain period of duration.
Very important work in our community, Sarah. Let me ask one last question that we're specifically talking about this COVID-19 virus and some of the words. Again, these are some big words that have been coming out and some new words I think were created for Webster's Dictionary. Perhaps the first one is a, quote, super spreader, right? That was a new one that came up in 2020. But what about this word, a microcluster? What does that term mean?
Sure. Well, we know information about how a microcluster is determined was just released yesterday out of the governor's office. So we are rapidly looking at that. But essentially, it's an area where the prevalence of COVID is higher, than the goal here. And we need to do some really careful, put some safety parameters in place to make sure that we're reducing the spread, getting people tested, protecting communities. And there are red, orange, and yellow zones. And in the yellow zones, one of the particular challenges that we're having is those schools in the yellow zones need to test 20% of their students, faculty, and any staff that are on site at the school during the day. And that's thousands and thousands of tests. And the school, we have the kits, thanks to the state providing them, but we don't have the staff. And so, again, it kind of goes back to that need for public health, trained public health experts that know how to administer tests. And, lack of funding and limited funding and this increased workload. And we certainly don't have an ability to deploy 5 staff to go out to a school to do this 20% of surveillance testing in schools. We'd love to be able to do that, but it's not realistic. And so it's concerning. So I think if all communities work together, do the right thing, wear your mask, socially distance, no large gatherings, hopefully we can take care of and stomp out some of these clusters that are being identified.
Thank you, and thanks for explaining the red, orange, and yellow zones as well. And they are tied to the term microcluster or a cluster and then zooming into that particular neighborhood or that particular zip code becoming the microcluster or a particular area of a town or a village. Thank you very much. Let's talk for a minute about the functions and responsibilities of the local health departments. How have they the functions and responsibilities of local health departments changed? Have they changed to slow the spread of COVID-19 and meet the needs of residents during the pandemic? What happened?
Sure. And I mentioned this before, local health departments have vast experience in this area. So they've tackled H1N1, Zika, Ebola, a host of all different pandemics. So this is something they're skilled at. The responsibilities haven't so much changed as directed public health work to core emergency response and communicable disease measures. So local health departments, they focus on contact tracing, isolation, quarantine, community outreach and education regarding social distancing and other requirements. They do a lot of work assisting businesses implementing necessary disinfection, air filtration, mask use, and social distancing requirements. We know there have been so many new guidance documents and requirements for these businesses, so we've really been doing everything we can to support them. At the beginning, some activities were delayed. So some of the work that local health departments were delayed while New York was on pause. So, restaurant inspections, for example, led home visits. But then as New York State started reopening, those activities really needed to resume. So on top of the core public health services they provide, they're also doing this really leading this pandemic response locally. A big focus has been working with the schools and then new responsibilities. So we've been asked to inspect gyms, private gyms. This is something we've never done before. We don't regulate gyms, but we found the bandwidth to do that. Addressing questions related to public health measures from businesses, not typically regulated by us, but we did that as well. And, you know, engaging and making sure that the public is aware of what's going on. This has been a heavy lift, and it's beyond our normal duties, but really critical to the pandemic to slow the spread of COVID-19 in New York State.
I've seen County Sarah rise to the occasion here during this pandemic in ways that I've never seen before to address the needs of the community. And the local health department is a core pandemic response and is just to be commended for all of the great work that they're doing. But funding for these important public health work comes from a number of sources, including local sources like county property taxes or local sales taxes, fees that are charged for restaurant permit fees, of course, state reimbursements, some federal grants, state aid for what's called general public health work, or what's known in the Capitol as, quote, Article 6 funding. Let's talk about Article 6 of the public health law, which requires the counties to deliver core public health services and establishes a program for the state to reimburse the county health departments for the expenses they incur. Can you explain what these core public health services are and how the state typically reimburses the counties?
Happy to do that. So core or basic services, they're just that. They're foundational services that public health provides to promote health and wellness and prevent disease and disability and injury in communities. While many services involve interactions with individuals, public health core services are designed to address population health, which is where they differ from, you know, clinical health care. So the core public health services are prevention-focused rather than treatment-focused. Public Health Article 6 law requires municipalities to provide the core services to be eligible for state aid to support their public health work. Through Article 6, the state provides a base grant, which is currently set at $650,000 or 65 cents per capita, whichever is greater in the full service counties, and then in partial service counties, it's about it's $500,000. Localities receive 100% reimbursement for eligible expenses up to that amount. However, for eligible expenses that exceed the base grant, the 57 counties outside of New York City receive 36% reimbursement. New York City receives even less. They receive 20% reimbursement. So that means for every dollar spent above that base grant, counties pay 64 cents of the dollar, and New York City pays 80%, with the state covering the balance. So to apply for the reimbursement, they prepare a state aid application, which must be approved by the state. It outlines their budgets and their anticipated expenditures in each of the core areas that they're providing. There's a major issue here for localities because fringe and indirect costs are all considered ineligible expenses. So costs around health, healthcare, pension, other fringe benefits, for example, that's 100% a local cost. And local health departments need people to do their work. It really relies on the public health workforce. So it's really challenging locally.
Well, the pandemic has taught us a lot of things about the way that we deliver health and human services, public services. It has been a true tragedy and a true crisis. But let's hope there's a silver lining here and that we truly understand the necessity to properly fund public health and that we are properly recruiting staff to get more staff into the county local health departments. I know in rural counties across New York State, there's just a handful of individuals working in those local health departments. In the urban counties or the larger suburban counties, they may have a local health department that could help staff and test the school districts, but in the rural areas of the state, they certainly do not have the staff. So I hope that folks entering in college or we have a workforce here of the future here that really that the government at the both levels, the federal, state, and local, makes a long-term investment. It sounds like when you're describing this Article 6 or these core public health services. We're talking about communicable diseases. We're talking about emergency preparedness and response, and we're talking about environmental health. All of those are front and center right now during this pandemic. It just seems like very counterintuitive to be withholding federal funds or state funds. Let's talk about withholding or reimbursement that's not making its way into the communities right now. The pandemic and the resulting shutdown had a devastating effect on the state and the county budgets, and we are sympathetic to the state's resources as we're suffering the same way locally in the counties. In recent weeks, we've seen the state respond by withholding 20% or more of the funding owed to counties in virtually every category. However, Article 6 reimbursement follows a different approval process. The way that counties submit for reimbursement, as you talked about, Sarah, the counties have to do a state-approved plan and a voucher process. Are these vouchers that are being drafted by the counties seeking their statutory reimbursement, are they being approved at the full amount that's owed back to the county?
Not at this time. They are not being reimbursed at 100%. So Article 6 reimbursement is not necessarily subject to that same 20% withholdings as the other programs. The withholdings seem to be pretty varied. And to be honest, counties have received notifications of withholdings for various state funds, but we haven't seen a comprehensive breakdown of all of the funding that's subject to.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you. Is there a breakdown of where the withholdings are happening in local public health programs?
Right. Yeah, we haven't seen anything. And to be honest, it would be very helpful if there was more transparency in how these decisions were being made at the state level. It's so important, as you know so well, for localities to know exactly what to expect during the voucher reimbursement process for budget planning purposes. So, we're not aware and we have not seen a full breakdown at this time.
Well, it would be beneficial for the counties, the local health departments, to have this information so that we, too, can prioritize and plan locally on the resources that we have and how we can expend those resources to address the needs of the community. For instance, if we know that we're not going to be receiving certain reimbursement in family health or community health assessment or other areas of communicable disease, then we will not be working in those categories, and we can work where the state wants us to work. They seem to want control of the pandemic. They have control of the pandemic. And so by having this information of where the state wants the resources to be spent on, it certainly would be helpful to have that breakdown and, more importantly, the priorities of the state and all of these local public health programs. Sarah, how will the state aid withholdings affect those local health services and the ability for the local health department to respond during the pandemic? Is this funding critical to the local response?
This is going to have a significant impact for local public health services and pandemic response. We recently surveyed the local health departments earlier in the summer about the potential impact of a 20% withholding both on core services and on pandemic response. So in terms of key core areas for public health emergency response, 64% of local health departments responded indicating that they would need to reduce services, either targeted or across the board. And even 5% said they're no longer be able to provide most of or all of the required services. So really devastating to the public health landscape. Communicable disease, 61% of local health departments indicated that they would need to reduce services. Family health, even greater numbers, 74% of local health departments indicated that they'd need to reduce services. 10% even stated that they'd no longer be able to provide those services. So we're talking about things like maternal child health services, home visiting, eliminating those services altogether. That would be pretty disastrous. The list goes on. Chronic disease, community health assessments, both in the 80 percentile of having to reduce services, environmental health services, so lead inspections, restaurant inspections, 67 percent of local health departments would need to reduce services. So we're talking about really important core public health services, community outreach, education in schools, lead poisoning prevention education, all areas that would need to be reduced if these withholdings are not reimbursed by the state. And these are areas that we as a state cannot afford to see eliminated or reduced in any capacity.
Well put. We've been joined by Sarah Ravenhall, the Executive Director of the New York State County Health Officials Association. And I really want to thank you, Sarah, for your leadership during this pandemic and the leadership of the local health commissioners and the directors of public health all across this state. The contribution that they made saved the lives of millions of New Yorkers and were the frontline essential workers executing the policies of the state, the directives of the governor, the executive's orders of the governor, the executive orders of the state, and the administrative directives of the state health department, the state of New York, the governor, our leader of this great state of New York, battling this COVID-19. But it is the counties that execute all of those policies to protect the people of New York. I just want to say thank you to you, Sarah, personally, and to all of your members, the commissioners and the directors, the nurses and the administrative staff of the departments, of the local health departments. Before we go, Sarah, is there anything else that we haven't covered that you would like to add, anything that keeps you up at night, or anything that you'd like to discuss that we haven't touched upon in this current conversation?
Yes, there are two things, and I like to end on a positive note. And the first thing is that with NYSAC's leaders, you, Stephen, at the helm, have done a phenomenal job supporting counties and supporting NYSACO throughout this really interesting time. And I've also heard a lot of wonderful things about the county leaders, the county executives, managers, administrators, elected officials at the local level who have stepped up to the plate and done everything that they can to support public health during this time. I mean, we could not have done this without strong county leadership, and we've really seen some incredible intergovernmental relationships form during this time, and it's something that I hope continues on, for time. And then the other thing is that something that gives me hope here. A recent national poll led by the de Beaumont Foundation demonstrated bipartisan support for public health. It's risen sharply between 2018 and 2020, likely in response to COVID-19 and all of the publicity it's received. In 2020, 7 in 10 voters say public health departments are important to create a healthy community, and in 2018, only 5 out of 10 voters agreed with that statement. So that's a sharp incline. And then today, as of today, 60% of voters say they are very or somewhat familiar with their local health department. That's an increase from 49% in 2018. And I'll tell you, I think it's so important that local constituents see value in public health. That is something that will translate to the state and federal levels in terms of funding infrastructure for local health departments and public health organizations so that we continue doing the work that we're doing. And, I'm eager to see what happens in the future with this.
My, I'm certainly glad I asked that question. You certainly did have something to add there in finishing on a positive note. You know, Sarah, thank you so much for raising those points, and thank you for talking about it. Really did take a community of counties to beat back this pandemic. Under the leadership of our state, these counties rose to the occasion. These county executives, these county managers and sheriffs and local emergency management and local health departments all coming together as a family. This was a family of New Yorkers that are public servants that truly protected the public. And I'm so glad that you brought that up, because I saw intergovernmental partnerships and cooperation even regionally in regions of the state where the local governments were working as a region to help turn back these positive tests that were coming in the early days of the pandemic. So I'm very glad that you brought that up. I'll leave it at that. I'm so grateful for your service. Thank you so much to NYSHO, and thanks so much for taking some time today to do a podcast.
Absolutely. I feel the same way. Thank you, Stephen.
Thanks for listening to this NYSAG podcast. Keep tuning in to hear more insightful conversations on county government throughout New York State, and feel free to reach out to our staff if there is a topic you would like to hear us discuss on the podcast.